Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Feels like everybody was ready for the New Year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I know it was hard for a lot of people 2016, so I think people were just ready for a change, new energy.
Well, I love the number 7, so
me
there's
too.
7 in the 17. 17 is a big number, too. So, yeah, I'm excited about the year.
It's funny. I haven't written 2017 yet, so maybe it doesn't feel real yet.
Oh, I just wrote it today.
You wrote your check. Exactly. Yeah. So until then, it's still 2016 for me.
You know what happens for me is I remember right initially really well, and then like a week or two later, it's like I completely forget it. Then I'll start writing 2016.
Yeah. That is really funny.
So how was your new year?
So things actually was funny. I know we talked before the show, and I was thinking, God, I really did have a really great weekend. So Thursday, my husband got tickets to the Lakers game.
Ooh, fun.
And a box seat. It was heaven. Let me just tell you, they bring around a dessert tray. I seriously, David's like, Kelly, you've talked about the dessert like 3 times. It was seriously the best dessert I've ever had. It was like this cookie dough blondie thing, but they had like everything. Like, it was just so much fun and such a great experience. And we got to meet a couple of the Lakers before the game. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I know who they are, but it was like AC Fisher or something like that. So it was really cool. It was a good experience. And then, you know, we had some family events, and I went to a friend's house in Santa Monica for dinner. So it was just like a social, really cool weekend. So it was nice.
Aw, that's sweet.
And how about you?
Made lobster tails.
You did?
Yes, they were good.
Oh my God, you're like Julia Childs. That's who you are. I swear. I'm like lucky if I like push
the
microwave
really,
button.
Really, really easy. I just steam them. Take a big pot, put a steamer.
Yeah.
Put water at the bottom. You take like a little thin stick.
Okay.
And you shove it through the center of them so that they don't like crumble. You
know, okay.
Whatever, buckle.
Uh-huh.
Right. So you keep them out.
Wow.
You crack the shells with scissors.
Okay.
On the outside, and then when they turn pink on the outside when they're done steamed. Then you just pop out with the shell.
And that's it.
Melted butter. Yummy.
Oh my God. Remy would have a heart attack with you. You know, he's like hardcore vegetarian. And he says to me, Mom, I think I want to be vegan. He's 7.
Oh, wow.
Yes. He's like, does it hurt the cows when you have to milk them? Like, he is.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You can't tell him about that.
I won't. It'll be a long time before he starts listening to our show.
Yeah, that's thank God. Thank God.
Okay, so we had a cool guest on last week who was Bill Benson, a board-certified behavioral scientist and licensed psychotherapist who was telling us about animal-assisted therapy.
Very cool.
Very cool.
I love that. I love what he does. And just, I really think it's such a gift to humanity to heal with animals. So, yeah, it was wonderful. And his foundation is the Peacock Foundation, if anybody's looking to volunteer. I think they are looking for volunteers. But it's just, it's a great organization. And I really love what they stand for.
Yes. And if anybody would like to give us a call, please do so at 323-203-0815. And today we have a very interesting guest. So without further ado, I will do the introduction. Today we have Kent Heckenlively, a science teacher, attorney, and founding contributing editor of Age of Autism, the father of a daughter stricken with autism after her childhood vaccinations. Kent has applied his exacting skills to explore the connection between childhood vaccines and autism in 2 books just released, Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, and Plague, One Scientist's Intrepid Search for the Truth About Human Retroviruses, Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Autism, and Other Diseases. That one co-authored with Dr. Judy Mikovits, a 20-year-old government scientist and former head of the Lab of Antiviral Drug Mechanisms at the National Center. I can't read. Kelly, can take over. I swear to God, I can't read today.
The National Cancer Institute quickly became one of the best-selling virus books of the last 30 years and has garnered extensive praise from the patient community and leading physicians. During undergrad and law school, Kent worked for U.S. Senator Pete Wilson and the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco. After leaving law to become a science teacher, Heck and Lively attended the Teacher Research Academy at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, spending 8 weeks in a virus lab investigating the expression of microRNAs in a monkey model of Ebola infection.
Wow, cool. Welcome, Kent.
Thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
That was a mouthful for me, apparently. I couldn't speak.
Sorry about that.
No, it's impressive. It's amazing. So can you tell us, okay, first and foremost, why you decided to write this book?
Well, in the summer of 2014, like a lot of members of the autism community, I first heard the news of Dr. William Thompson, a CDC scientist who had turned federal whistleblower. That means he'd applied for and been granted federal whistleblower protection. He turned over more than 10,000 documents to the office of Congressman William Posey, claiming that the CDC had covered up a link between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, also known as the MMR vaccine, and autism.
Wow.
Now, specifically, what he alleged is that their study, which looked at the what was happening at the time, is that kids in the United States were normally getting their MMR shots at about 36 months. But a recommendation was made by the CDC a few years earlier that kids should get it like at 24 or 12 months or 18
mm-hmm.
months.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of set up as a natural science experiment. So you could have this bunch of data about kids getting their MMR shots at 36 months and then before 36 months. So what they found in their research is that specifically, African-American males who got the earlier MMR shot had a 3.4-fold increase in autism, which is dramatic. Anything above 2.0 is usually considered definitive proof. What they also found is that among a group they called isolated autism, that there was a 2.4-fold increase in autism. Now, what is isolated autism? Isolated autism is what the rest of the sane world calls normally developing children, meaning they didn't have any other conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty dramatic. I mean, I refer to it as the autism Watergate. And
yeah.
So what happened is, this was about 2002, 2003, and they eventually published their article in the journal Pediatrics. It's known as the DiStefano study. And what Thompson claimed is that they removed some of the data. They removed the data that showed an increased risk to African-American males. They removed the data which showed an increased risk to basically every other child in America. And they lied. And what they actually did, according to Thompson, is they actually went into the CDC on a Saturday, got a big garbage can, and threw all of their files, including their computer files, into a big garbage can. Thompson retained his records. He was actually the statistician and the technical guy, so he knew where to store the data. So he kept all these records. And I really wish in 2003 or 2004 he had gone to the New York Times with this, because it would have helped us greatly. But he retained all these records, and in 2014, he then turned all this information over to Congress, and he's been granted federal whistleblower protection, and he's been waiting for 2 years to testify about his allegations. Now, what I did was, when I heard this story, I thought, man, I can hardly wait till this comes out in the mainstream media. But I've been a longtime autism advocate, so I knew that it might get buried, and sure enough, it did.
Mm-hmm.
So about 6 months after that, I applied for and was granted access by Congress to the documents that Thompson turned over, and I used that as the basis for writing Inoculated, as well as interviews with another scientist to whom Thompson had confided, Dr. Brian Hooker, a college biology professor out of Simpson University in Northern California, as well as interviews with Dr. Andy Wakefield, who first posited a link between the MMR vaccine and autism, as well as some people who work in the federal government and have handled these issues. So all of that really forms the basis of Inoculated, which my wife finally says I've written a book that you don't have to be a PhD to read and understand. So there you have it.
Wow. And your own daughter in your bio says that your daughter is autistic?
Yeah. My daughter has autism. And, you know, what really kind of got me on this journey is that it was not necessarily her autism, because we think that she was damaged by her six-month vaccinations, but it manifested first as a seizure disorder. She was diagnosed at about 10 months. We think that it was her six-month vaccinations that harmed her. And then at the age of three, she was diagnosed as having autism. But our son came along next, and then for reasons unrelated to autism, we kept him on a hypoallergenic milk formula. Okay. I think that's a key part of this puzzle. And, you know, and we kept him on that till he was about 15 months old because, you know, it's kind of expensive.
Sure.
But I actually took my son to his 18-month checkup at the pediatrician's. And because I thought the pediatrician had missed something at my daughter's six-month checkup, he got run through a full developmental workup. He had 15, 20 words, looking appropriately, everything's great. Gets a shot. 3 days later, my wife, who's a speech therapist, actually, said, you know, Ben stopped talking, and he started pounding his head on the floor.
Wow.
And so suddenly, this theory that I had, you know, really rejected and not thought of as credible, I had dramatic proof of that in my own life. It was further solidified for me because shortly after that, within a couple days of my wife saying that, I ran across the gluten casein-free diet, the wheat and dairy-free diet, put both kids on it, didn't really do much for my daughter, but within 12 days, my son said his first word again. And
wow.
It was like we caught him as he was falling into the abyss of autism.
Wow.
And my wife says it took about a year for him to catch up in language to his peers, about 2 years for his social skills, for his sensory skills to sensitivities to go away. But he entered kindergarten is a normally developing five-year-old, and, you know, he's 16 years old now, you know, great student, he's a great athlete, he's a track star, and he's, you know, king of the weight room at his high school, and, you know, my daughter still has trouble walking and can't speak, so I knew that something dramatic had happened, and, you know, I think it was just one of those, you know, choice moments in life, one of those decision points where you just say, I need to follow this, you know, God, whatever, this is the path I'm supposed to follow. I'm supposed to get to the bottom of this. So that's kind of been my life for the past 15 years, in addition to raising a family and teaching science.
Wow. Wait, is your son still on a special diet? Does he still eat the gluten-free and dairy-free?
You know, it was kind of funny because we kept him on that diet for about 2 years, and then, you know, we started testing things to see if there'd be any problem, and, you know, now he gets pizza with pepperoni and cheese and has a great time with it. And, you know, suffers no effects from it.
Oh, wow.
Because Kelly, one of your sons,
yes,
you've been doing the gluten-free.
Well, it's really funny you said that because, so I have two kids and they both probably, one definitely has ADHD, the other one probably does. But, you know, it's kind of like that gray area where I could almost see, you know, some high functioning autism. And I go to a holistic pediatrician and he recommended that my younger son, I mean, he had some digestive issues anyway, but he said, you know, gluten-free and dairy-free. And he said, you'll see, he will be clearer. Like, he won't be as foggy. And that's exactly what happened. I feel like he just wasn't in, like, a haze. It was almost as if, you know, that's the best way to describe it. So we've been keeping him on it for quite a while now, too. And
has he adapted? Is he, like, doing
that? He's very, he's used to it. I mean, you know, he knows. But I'm almost scared to test the other stuff because he's had good results from it. But I can definitely see how that can make a difference.
Yeah. So, you know, that kind of got me on this mission. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when this whistleblower came forward, it was, you know, kind of a confirmation of a lot of our worst fears because for many years, autism activists like us have looked at the research done by the CDC, and we've just kind of shaken our head. We're just going, you know, something doesn't add up here. And, you know, we didn't know if they were just consciously making a decision to avoid it. And what was really pretty dramatic in this MMR study is to get the documents and to look at the analysis plan that the CDC came up with and to see that it was really a good plan. I mean, you know, it was put together the way scientists are supposed to put something together, which is they want to get to the truth. But in the confession that Thompson signed, he actually says, we changed the analysis plan. And, you know, this is just, you know, forbidden in science. Yeah. You know, or if you do it, you announce that, you confess that. And, you know, what's really terrible is these scientists at the CDC used the results from this phony MMR study and also phony data looking at the question of mercury and autism. And in 2004, they persuaded the federal government that based on these two phony studies that they would spend no federal dollars investigating vaccines and autism. And, you know, I'm one of these people who believes that science has a sacred obligation to tell the truth without fear or favor. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's no greater sin, if you will, in science than lying, which is exactly what the people at the top of the CDC have done. And so as a result, you know, all of the people below that pyramid of, you know, medical authority have followed this as if it's, you know, as if it's gospel. And it's really just, it's garbage and it's corruption. So, you know, I wrote the book so that, a regular person could read it. But, you know, I'm just following the evidence that, you know, mm-hmm. I got from Congress, which is what I think any good investigative reporter would have done, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. But it just seems like we've lost that breed in America today.
So is the basic study saying that if young children get these vaccines early, there's just a higher risk? Or is it in general also saying no matter what the age, there could be a correlation between vaccines and autism?
Well, here's the thing, that even though I say that the research plan was good, I still find some deficiencies in it, okay? So all that they looked at was children who got the MMR vaccine after 36 months and those who got it before 36 months, okay? It's a little bit like studying lung cancer rates and saying, I'm going to study one group that smoked two packs of cigarettes a day, and I'm going to study another group that smoked one pack of cigarettes a day. I teach my students that there's a thing called a control group, mm-hmm. which means you have a group of people who never smoked at all, mm-hmm. if you're going to look at that. So the real study would have been, you know, a group of kids who got the MMR vaccine, you know, before 36 months, those who got it after 36 months, and then maybe a group that never got it at all.
Right.
That's a better study.
Yeah.
And so the science is really bad in this. And, you know, to say nothing of the fact that, you know, children today in the United States, the CDC recommends 49 doses of 16 different vaccines before the age of 6. Well, when you get into science, you learn about this little thing called complexity, which means, you know, when I teach my students to do a good experiment, I tell them they can only change one thing. You know, if you went to your doctors and you said, gee, you know, my back's kind of hurting me. And so the doctor says, hey, tell you what, I got 16 different medications I want to give you.
Yeah.
And I want you to take them at the same time.
You won't know, you know, which one actually has the effect. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's crazy, you mm-hmm. know? So, and, you know, that brought me to the bigger question because, you know, with my background as an attorney before I became a science teacher, you know, I don't trust anybody. You know, the joke in the legal profession is if a client tells you his mother loves him, you get a second opinion.
That's funny. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that brought me back to the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, signed into law by President Reagan and passed by a Democratic Congress. And even in Reagan's own signing statement, he says, I'm signing this bill with significant reservations because I don't think it has a proper system of checks and balances, and I'm asking Congress to fix it in the next session. It's really interesting to know that Reagan's own Justice Department recommended that he veto the bill in an opinion written by then Assistant Attorney General John Bolton, who was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations under the second President Bush, and you know may get a role in the new administration. So when I look at that, and I look at how they took vaccines out of the regular civil court system and put it in this terrible court that any legal expert who looks at it is really appalled, because you can't ask the pharmaceutical manufacturers for any documents, you can't interview any scientists. It's really a terrible court. But even with all of that, those terrible things, I think it would surprise your listeners to know that this vaccine court has awarded over $3.2 billion, that's billion with a B, for vaccine injuries to children. Mm. And so I look at all of that, and I just think that the system set up by this National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act has been an absolute disaster for the health of our children. So, you know, I'm not asking anything radical, and what I argue in the book is just we got to get rid of this vaccine court. We got to get rid of this National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. Put vaccines back in the regular court system, you know, the same court system that, you know, covers things like the toaster that might catch fire and burn down your kitchen. But I think we need to have these protections for our children.
So I'm curious, so for some people who are listening, they might be going, well, what's the alternative? I'm not going to get my kids vaccinated. Oh, my gosh, they could get sick. They could have these diseases. How do you weigh in on the risks and benefits?
It's a really tough question to answer. But it's not my fault that this exists. It's not my fault that the federal government has not done the kind of studies that are needed to assess safety. So I find myself saying, you know, there is really no good evidence on the vaccine schedule and, you know, the health of children. Mm-hmm. So you look at that and you go, God, it's an untested system. You know, if you had your kid and you said, hey, look, there's somebody who's going to drive him to school, but sometimes he's drunk, but he'll never get himself tested, so you never know, you wouldn't put the kid in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we have to do is we, you know, first of all, we have to bring this to consciousness. I mean, that's why, you know, I wrote the book. So I say, you know, look, take a look at my documents. You know, this is stuff I got from Congress. This is not some, you know, some out there thing.
Sure.
I'm doing the job that investigative reporters, you know, used to do 20 or 30 years ago. Make your own decisions. But as I look at it, in my personal opinion, the system to assess safety is completely inadequate. I say if you really want to vaccinate your kids, you know, look at the schedule that existed in 1985. It seemed to be so much safer than before.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the main problem is, in all likelihood, is vaccines that kids get before the age of 3 or 4, because you can go to any biology textbook and they'll tell you that the human immune system really isn't functioning fully until 3 or 4 years old. So mm-hmm. why are we loading kids up with 20 or 30 doses of vaccines, you know, before they're, you know, 2 or 3 years old?
Sure. I completely understand what you're saying. Yeah. I'm curious. I know you were on the Jenny McCarthy show, and I'm sure she had a lot to say. Because her story is very similar, correct? Like I think Evan was talking and everything was okay, and then he got his vaccine, and she said it was almost immediate, correct? That he, you know, wasn't talking, and it was a very similar situation.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Jenny's been great, and, I always jokingly tell people, I was here before Jenny.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And in fact, you know, one of my really good friends, J.B. Handley, who founded Generation Rescue, is the one that Jenny talked to first. But, you know, we'd already been in this fight a couple of years by the time Jenny showed up, and boy, she's just, you know, she's been a badass.
Yes.
I love her, you know.
I know.
She has really done a great job, and, you know, it was kind of funny when she had me on her show because, you know, I guess, you know, it's serious, and they didn't want her talking about controversial things, and
uh-huh.
she just kind of said, screw it, I'm going to have Kent on, and we had a great talk.
That's great. I love her. I haven't met her, but she just seems so cool, down to earth and fun, so
yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Whip smart.
Yes, she is. You can tell. Absolutely. Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay, so did you come up against a lot of controversy writing this book? I mean, I can imagine some crazy death threats or anything nuts like that happening.
You know, what's really interesting is I personally have not had any kind of threats like that. But I interview some people who were in this fight, like Brandy Vaughn, who founded Learn the Risk Campaign, and she was a former pharmaceutical representative for Merck, and she used to be selling Vioxx.
Wow.
Before it got banned. And you know, she tells me stories of corporate intimidation and just terrible things. And you know, and then you know, there are troubling stories of you know, doctors, you know, in our community dying under suspicious circumstances. One of them, Jeff Bradstreet, was one of my daughter's doctors, and you know, I saw him 3 weeks before he supposedly killed himself in a river with a pistol.
Wow.
And so it is kind of terrifying. And you know, one of the things that Brandy Vaughn has said to me with her experience of being in the pharma world is she says, look, these pharmaceutical companies have amazing interior surveillance programs that they use against their employees to make sure they're not selling the formulation to another pharmaceutical company. You know, do you really believe that in this, you know, fight, which is worth billions of dollars to them, they wouldn't use it against your movement? And that's kind of a terrifying thought.
Yes.
So I don't really have any stories of my own, but that seems kind of terrifying to me, that possibility.
Unbelievable. Oh my, Deborah's like, oh, she's looking at the book. I mean, it is. It's absolutely incredible. Wow. Okay. So, what was my other question I was going to ask about?
You know, let me take that back. I do have one story to tell you that's kind of quick. So, you know, in California now we've got this SB 277, which says that kids have to be vaccinated according to the CDC schedule.
Yes.
Or they'll deny them a public education. Well, there was an earlier bill which just said if parents wanted to decline a vaccine, they had to have like a 30-minute talk with their physician before they did it for informed consent. And, you know, I went up with a bunch of people to, you know, protest this. And the scariest thing in the world happened to me, which was that, so there, I'm there with about 700-800 parents. We're all, you know, given 2 minutes. You know, my name is so-and-so. I don't like this bill. And then two buses pull up from Southern California, loaded with medical students. I watch as the students get off the bus, and you know, they come into the Capitol, and then somebody is there handing them out of their plastic bags these new white lab coats. And so here we are, 700 or 800 parents, and you know, we're all testifying. And then these two busloads of medical students from Southern California pulls up, and they're each handed their white lab coats, and they testify in front of this committee at the Capitol. And I'm just saying to myself, oh my God, we are so outfought, you know?
Wow.
They are so cute, and they're so earnest. But who the heck paid for two buses to drive these kids up there,
mm-hmm.
take care of their rooms, and give them nice white lab coats before they testify in front of the committee?
And they were testifying pro-vaccines.
Right.
Yes. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's so funny to me to look at it in retrospect, because every one of them got up there going, I would never think of denying a parent's right to choose the medical intervention they think is appropriate. I just think before they make that decision, they should be properly informed. And I'm going like, oh, yeah. This ain't the end, buddy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Properly informed. Oh my gosh. So many lies were told in this world.
Yes, so many lies.
You know, all I could do is laugh and go like, oh my God, I am so outgunned here.
So, okay, I have a question back to Dr. William Thompson. So was he sort of pressured initially to cover it up and then he came clean? Or how does he describe that?
You know, it's really a fascinating story, and it's right at the beginning of my book. So it seems like this just burned him for years. You know, in 2003, 2004, he even went so far as to write a letter to the head of the CDC at the time, a woman named Dr. Julie Gerberding, saying, I am supposed to present these results at an Institute of Medicine review, and I am really troubled because I will have to present this troubling data. Please meet with me so we can discuss this. And I think that he really believed at the time that if he went to the top of the organization, he would get somebody to listen to him. But instead, what happened is he was cited for breaking the chain of command at the CDC. And, you know, a letter of reprimand was put in his folder. And, you know, he got counseling for his anger issues over his claims that the CDC was not properly concerned about vaccine safety. And, you know, it caused him a lot of troubles. And then it really seemed, I actually don't know what happened, but he called up Dr. Brian Hooker, who is somebody who's a scientist. He's a college biology professor at Simpson University, Northern California. And, you know, supposedly it was a wrong number because the two had communicated, you know, 10 years before when Dr. Brian Hooker was one of the representatives of the parent community. And it just seemed like Thompson had finally had enough. And he knew that Hooker had been trying to get some data from the CDC that the CDC had been stonewalling him on. And so he told Hooker, here's how you need to ask for the information. It's a publicly available data set. So ask it this way, write it to this email address. And it seems that, Thompson was actually the guy on the other end who had to be in charge of answering it. So it seemed like Thompson, since he knew where all the data was and how it was being concealed, he set it up so that Hooker would ask the right information, and then Thompson would have to give him the information and hope that, you know, his fellow co-conspirators didn't catch on.
Right.
Wow.
And just to clarify for our audience, CDC stands for Center for Disease Control, because I know you're talking about that a lot. I don't want people to get confused. But, wow.
It's amazing. And
So it's almost like the Edward Snowden situation, because if you know much about Edward Snowden, he was the guy who was the tech guy. So he had to set up, you know, the computers and the routing systems and the programs. So if you're going to hide information, the person who sets up the system has to know where the things are going to be hidden. Thompson was one of the guys who knew where the information was hidden in the computer files.
Right, right. This is amazing. So
it's frightening.
I know, it is
really. I mean, it's like, wow.
And I know.
I mean, you know, I think of this as nothing less than a crime against humanity, because I don't think there's, you know, a worse crime that you can commit as a scientist than covering up harm to children.
Sure.
I just don't. You know, I challenge anybody to come up with a more wicked crime.
And the other two scientists who were involved with this, who did cover it up, have they stated anything? Have they denied it? What do they say? Or do they?
Well, there were actually five involved in it. And what was really interesting is the journalist Cheryl Atkinson, former CBS investigative reporter, now she's got her own show called Full Measure on Sinclair Network. She actually interviewed Frank DiStefano, who is the lead author on it. And it is just the most painful interview to read, because she's published it, and actually it forms part of a complaint that Brian Hooker and Andy Wakefield have filed with Congress. And it's just the most amazing set of evasions that Frank DiStefano makes. Well, I know there had been some controversy over some results, and we just needed to figure out what was true or not true. And, you know, I haven't heard any, you know, discussion of this for years. And you just kind of, you know, I'm trained as an attorney, okay? Yeah. So I'm listening to this, I'm going, oh, man, you are such a weasel.
Right. Wow.
Think about it. I am making the most terrible accusations against our federal government. I am claiming that the federal government, in terms of the CDC, National Institutes of Health, are actively covering up harm to children. And these claims are being made by others. There's a great documentary film out, Vax from Cover-Up to Catastrophe, which Dr. Brian Hooker did an amazing thing in legally recording four long conversations with Thompson where he goes over the conspiracy. And so I find myself going, man, we are making some wild accusations. If they're untrue, please come after us. Please file a lawsuit against me for defamation, because I am so wanting to take your deposition. But the strategy has been to act like people like me, people like Brian Hooker, people like Andy Wakefield, William Thompson, don't exist.
Right.
And so that's why I'm so thankful that radio hosts around the country have been booking me like crazy, because so many people know that the true story isn't being told. So I thank you. The radio hosts around the country have just been so embracing of this story. And you know what I say is, hey, look, read my book.
Yeah.
I've got all the footnotes to the congressional documents. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Right.
I would welcome an open and public debate with anybody, anywhere, anytime on this issue, because these are claims that the American public needs to debate.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking about a lot of my mom's friends who are in kind of deep denial. It's almost like they don't even want to imagine. It's almost easier to just do what the pediatrician says and give the vaccines, and to think of an alternative or harming their kids is kind of not even an option. So it's really interesting.
It really is terrible. And you know, what I say is, you know, I have so much sympathy for people who resist the message that I'm saying, because this is really unprecedented in history. It is unprecedented, especially in American history, that you are told that something is good for your child, something that every child in America should do, is actively harming them, and the people in charge know it. So I understand that this is, you know, a tough pill for people to swallow. And you know, what I also say in the book is, I know that this is a story of darkness, and it is a story of incredible darkness, but, you know, my investigations with scientists who are leading the charge against this tells me that if we actually tell the truth, I think we are 2 to 3 years away from actually having treatments, if not outright cures, for these kids. Because these kids are surviving. This is not like HIV/AIDS, where these kids are dying by and large. They're living with this, and I think that their bodies are just not, and brains are not working the way they're supposed to. But it's almost like they've been put in a state of, you know, hibernation. So these kids' brains can be woken up. But, you know, hey, I'm a Catholic, so I believe in confession before forgiveness and healing. And so the book is goes into the dark places, but it also goes into the really hopeful places. And, you know, I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe it, that if we actually looked at this as a society, I think in 2 to 3 years we could have this problem solved.
Well, that's hopeful, at least. Yeah. I have one last question for you, because I know that you have to run. Would you say that vaccination-induced autism looks any different than non-vaccination-induced? I mean, autism doesn't only come from vaccinations, right?
Yeah, you know, what I think it is I think it's an overreaction of the immune system. So you can have things that could provoke the immune system to overreaction. You can have people whose immune system is very sensitive and misguided. So it is possible, but, you know, I really think that it is it's a new condition. I mean, before 1944, this condition had never been seen. So, you know, and you go back and you look at the early history of vaccinations, and lo and behold, the first 11 kids diagnosed by Leo Kanner, who's kind of the father of autism, They were all the children of very well-educated parents, one of whom was actually the originator of the well baby visit. And there was an early polio vaccine going around at the time.
Wow.
So it's kind of interesting. I think this is a man-made problem. I really don't think it is anything that we can blame on nature.
Mm-hmm.
We can blame people having different genetics, so they react differently to chemicals and viruses. But this is man's fault. It's not nature's fault.
Oh, absolutely. Well, unbelievable.
At least it's not woman's fault. I'm just kidding.
Not woman's fault either.
Right, exactly. So we've been talking with Kent Heckenlively. I love that last name. Author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. Do you have any parting words that you want to say to our listeners?
I think that this is, you know, both a fight in this world, but I think it's also a spiritual battle. You know, I really love what Nelson Mandela did in South Africa, because he had three principles. One was, you know, the path of truth, satyagraha. He had the principle of ahimsa, which is, you know, I do not mean harm to my enemies. I just want the truth to come out. And, you know, the concept of Ubuntu, which is we are who we are through each other. And I think one of the worst things that's happened to the autism parents is we've been made the other. You know, we've been made those people to shun. You know, we've got sick kids and we have no help from the scientific community. So, you know, what I want to do is I want to help put science back together. I mean, when I say how science lost its soul in autism, I mean that. And my goal here is to help science regain its soul and be a servant of humanity.
Wow. Thank you
Beautiful.
So
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Such an interesting show. I really appreciate you and what you're doing. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye,
Bye-bye.
Kent. Wow.
Bye-bye.
So many interesting
Oh my God!
About
yeah, exactly.
As I was talking, it was making me think about the whole dieting industry and how much we're lied to about things, weight
yes.
loss, and how to lose weight,
yes.
and all that. Even the original like nutritional guidelines about
sure.
something like 6 to 11 servings of carbohydrates and mm-hmm. like breads and things
yes,
like that.
Yes, and milk.
And milk. Yes,
milk was
High
does
up
a body
there.
Good and
the,
all
the
that
pyramid.
Stuff.
The
yes.
pyramid is just not.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then we're sold these things as if they're just the gospel truth.
Yes.
And we believe them.
Absolutely.
And then you find out, you know, 20 years later, that wasn't true
exactly.
at all.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I loved what he was saying about science. Science has such an important place in our
mm-hmm.
world, and it has to be trustworthy.
Yeah.
It has to be something that you get, like, whether you get the results you are looking for or not,
sure.
shouldn't matter. It's that you're doing it the right way.
Exactly.
Oh.
Well, do you think it's that the pharmaceutical companies are funding, you know, the CDC
or the research and
yeah.
such? Yeah.
I think so. It's
yeah.
really scary.
Oh, it's so skewed.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, it makes me scared because I've got my kids who still need some vaccines and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. I mean, it makes you wary. That's the word, you know, it's like.
Well, I don't know if you got the takeaway that there, he was saying something about before 1985, there was a schedule
uh-huh.
of vaccinations that was
yeah,
better,
less yeah.
and older.
Yes.
So maybe
oh, I see.
There's
yeah.
less concern about
sure.
that
Is it
than,
older?
Than
yeah.
there's, you know, shoving that shit in the little ones
I
when
know.
They're babies.
Well, I was telling somebody. So my husband and I were having like a big controversy over this because when our first son was born, I was like, I don't want to vaccinate. Mm. And he grew up with a Western doctor and was like, oh, no, we have to. And it was funny because we both looked at each other and we're like, we both just want the best for our kid.
Yeah.
And how do we decide? And so we decided to space out the vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good compromise. And so I never got more than two at a time for Remy. And I mean, I think that's great. I mean, I think that's what works. Because, I mean, I remember when I was going to China and I had to get three vaccines and I felt so sick and run down. Yep. And I thought, oh, my God, if this is me, you know, an adult feeling this way. I can't imagine like a little kid, you know, with,
yeah.
all, you know, with all that stuff.
So do you get a flu shot?
No, I did last year
uh-huh.
and I regret it. I won't anymore. Well, I shouldn't say never, but I don't have a desire to right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Do you? Are you like pro flu shot?
You know, some years I'm pro,
yeah.
some years I'm against. So.
Right.
But I mean, I had the flu when
That's
I went to
right.
Alaska, and that was
yes.
awful. So
but did you get a flu shot that year?
No, I did
oh,
not.
Oh, you didn't.
But I got one this, and they said if I would have gotten it, I
would have been better.
Wouldn't have had it. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, it was.
It's so funny. But then it's so funny because Remy got a flu shot 1 year,
and then
he got the flu, and they said, "Oh yeah, it was the wrong strain or whatever." And I'm like, "Oh God!" So you can't win either way, right?
Yeah, and I was thinking too. Talk about these huge, massive governmental agencies, the Center for Disease Control and all that stuff. We look upon these people kind of as our parents, right? They're supposed to be our guides. They're supposed to be the ones imparting truthful, informative information that you want to trust them. So I know that's hard for people to hear this stuff and say,
yes,
you mean they're feeding us lies? How do you process that?
Yes.
You know, it's hard. It's hard to accept that that could be the reality.
It's easier to dismiss these people as quacks and weirdos, you know? And yeah.
I'll never forget this poster I once saw, and it was three little piglets, and they were sitting in a classroom, and there was one in the front that was like sweating, you know, just completely sweating and like paying so close attention to the teacher and the chalkboard, and another one in the middle that was a little bit daydreaming, but you could tell that was kind of paying attention. The one in the background, little tail was curled up around the base of the chair. He was just looking up in complete la-la land. And the saying said, ignorance is bliss.
Right.
Right?
Yes. So true, isn't it?
But it also can be very, very, very damaging, huh?
Sure. My God.
But
I think it's really brave that he's doing this, because I can imagine he must go up against a lot of people who are like, you know, don't believe him. So good for him.
He's also very confident and very educated.
Yes.
Clearly.
Yes.
He's...
helps. Yeah, exactly.
His research for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, any big plans for the week?
What is going on this week? Did I tell you I got my Invisalign off?
You got it off, and I'm going to get mine back on.
You're getting it. Are you kidding me?
Congratulations.
Stop. Yeah, well, I still need to wear a retainer. It's not like fully done, right. But it's mostly, I got the attachments off. Wait, you're getting it back on?
Well, I used the Invisalign as a retainer. That's how they originally gave it to me. I don't suggest that. Get a real retainer, because it got soft, and then my tooth actually ended up moving, and my dentist was going to try and shave off a little piece of my tooth over here to make room for it. He goes, I can't guarantee that that's going to work. So he's giving me a very good price on
Invisalign again.
He thinks it'll be about 2 to 3 months.
Oh, that's not that bad.
No, a couple trays.
Wait, so you... Okay, we'll have to talk afterwards.
I might do it, yeah.
Wow, that's so crazy.
So I'll be in here lifting.
Yes, with the lisp. Oh, God, I know.
But are you happy?
I'm so happy. I mean, I have to like... 2 more weeks with the same trays, nothing new. But I was getting headaches. That was part of my problem. I was getting headaches from the jaw pain, and I don't know. It was as Remy says, you know, Mom, are you excited to get rid of the mini sharks in your mouth?
Oh, how cute!
That's what I call them. So yeah, so I'm super excited. I feel like I've graduated. Exactly. So funny.
You now have naked teeth.
Thank God. Bring them on. Bring on the commando teeth.
So next week, we have Tina Bryson, who wrote The Whole Brain Child, No Drama Discipline.
2 books. Yeah, one is The Whole Brain Child, and then the other one is The No Drama Discipline.
All right.
So it's really interesting parenting technique. So that should be great.
So I'll be sad when I come in next week, because Tiffany and Michael are going to take Missy back. I love that dog.
She's a golden, right?
She's a golden. She's so... adorable. She's just so adorable. And she still has so much energy. Walking her, taking her on like 3 over 1 hour walks a day.
Oh,
just
my
to get her energy out. And she could still keep going. She just doesn't tire out.
It's like my kids. You should take my kids too with Missy.
They could ride Missy, actually.
Wow.
She's a good little horse.
So sweet.
I will also miss my daughter. And
yeah, exactly.
But you know, the dog.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
You get bonded.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. Visit our website, docandtherapist.com. You can always listen to replays on LA Talk Radio or on our iTunes podcast, The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, and a Twitter at DocTherapist1.
And we appreciate you listening. Make 2017 the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.